Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
Parsha's told us, right, we have a few basic themes. A quick review of the Parsha. Basically, it's two big storylines. One, Rivka is barren. So each one, Yitzchak and Rivka, pray in their respective corners, right? And they pray for Rivka to be able to conceive. And she does. She gives birth to twins. Diametrically opposed twins. Philosophy and outlook of life. The spirit and the soul and the sword. That's what it's about. Yaakov the spirit, Esau the sword. And she's told basically that these two will always be opposed. This is playing out all the history of mankind. These two philosophies. Okay? Then we have, in following up of this story, this is chapter 25, verses 19 through like 34. We have Yaakov buying the birthright from Esau, which we'll have to discuss. And then we have the story of the first famine of the world. The first famine was in the days of Abraham. This was another famine. Each one of the patriarchs experienced a famine. Very interesting. You're going to see a lot of themes. For example, in Yitzchak's life, everything's like repeated from Abraham's life. There's a famine in the land. He goes down to a country. He introduces his wife as a sister, right? His wife is abducted. He redigs the wells of his father, right? A lot of repetition of what happened to his father's life. He follows in that footsteps and a few other things as well. Okay, so then we have a whole incident of some anti-Semitism. The Jew gets wealthy during a depression, a famine. Yitzchak prospers, right? And the jealousy of the Goyim is aroused. They want to chase Yitzchak out of there. Eventually, they make a covenant with him. That needs to be discussed. Then we have the continuation of the story of Yaakov and Esav, right? Now comes time, it doesn't come time actually, but Yitzchak does not know when he's going to die, and he wants to offer blessings, right? And the apparent, but it's not, but we'll have to discuss it, it looks like a deception. Yaakov is dressed up as Esav to get the blessings, right? And what was that about? We're talking about two great people, Yitzchak and Rivka. They didn't miss the boat. Okay, so we have to understand what was going on there. And Esau's upset by this. He wants to kill Yaakov. Yaakov has to flee, go to the house of Lavan. Talk about going from the what is the expression from the fire?
Frying pan into the fire.
Right.
Come on, you're from
going from Esau and to Lavan's house to find a wife. Now Esau is described. You know his other name, Edom. He sees this red food in front of him, and he says. Well, that we're going to discuss, right? He is the hunter, the man of the field, right? And he's called Edom, red, right? In fact, he is the first redneck. Right? I just hope that doesn't offend him. Huh? No, no. I've been saving this just to pull this shit. Put it away now. Okay. No one will know this on the tape that I pulled out a rebel flag there. Okay. Okay. So now we're going to go into some highlights, if you will. You have to bear with me, and we're going to stop in intervals and take questions. Okay. The first thing we want to discuss is this whole entity of Esav, what he was about, why it not only was permitted to deceive by hook or crook to get the spiritual birthright out of his hand, but it was a mitzvah. And it's a sin to let a wicked person have a safer Torah in his hand, or any other mitzvah, or any other spirituality, which he's going to abuse. Remember, the spiritual birthright is not yours just because you're firstborn. Therefore, right, if you are not on the level, you can't have it, because you can cause destruction to the entire world. This world is only here because of Israel learning Torah. The spiritual Abrahamic, such a word, the brachas of Abraham, right, that mission has to go down. Right? It has to be continued. And by the way, two sets of brachas. There's two sets of blessings. Only at the very end of the parsha, when Yitzchak knows he's speaking to Yaakov, does he give him Birchas Avraham, the blessings of Avraham, which were always meant to go to Yaakov, the spiritual brachas. So what is it that Yitzchak wanted to give Esav that Yaakov got instead? Okay, that we'll discuss, but let me back up. Again, the spiritual birthright is not yours by right just because you were born first. You have to be up to that level because all the spiritual mission of mankind is at stake here. Therefore, when the firstborn of Israel, right, sinned at the golden calf, they lose it. They lose being the Bechor, and it's given to an elite group, the tribe of Levi, right? Therefore, right, even though Avraham has Yishmael, that doesn't go to him. The birthright goes to Yitzchak. And Yaakov himself will pass over Reuben and Shimon. And he gives the firstborn, the Bechor, is considered Yosef. Right? So this is repeated again and again, what the birthright's all about. Let's discuss Esav, and then I'm going to stop and take questions. Okay. Esav is a man that is out in the field. He's described as a ish sadeh, a man of the field, right? And Yaakov is described just the opposite, a man of the tent, right? And these represent their philosophies. Esav is only interested in external, how he looks, how he presents himself to the rest of the world, right? He is compared to the pig of the four animals that are mentioned in Shemini that only have one sign of kosher and one sign of not being kosher. Esav's the pig, because the pig's the only one that has an outside sign. Look at my hooves. I'm kosher. Look how sophisticated I am, the Western world. Look how cultured and civilized we are, Germany, right? But inside, he doesn't chew his cud. Inside, he's treif. Inside, their hearts and their intentions is treif. They put on this facade like the pig. Look. How, this is the exile we're in, by the way. Edom is the exile we're in right now. The hypocrisy and everything we're dealing with, that's this, that they pretend and put on these airs of being concerned about humanity and causes, but inside they have their own selfish motives at stake. That's the hypocrisy of this exile. Okay. So Esav comes in from field. He is hungry, right? Interesting. You know, Esav's the man. As you see, he's willing to sell his birthright for a bowl of beans, right? Is only concerned about this world, immediate gratification, right? And it says the angel, it says very interesting, the angel, when he kept trying to trap animals for his father, so it says the angel, when he would trap them, the angel would release the animal, the deer, and he would trap them, release it. So they said it's very symbolic, because Esav is the man that wants to have this world and forsake the next world, spirituality, and he ends up having neither. He doesn't enjoy this world. The angel keeps releasing the animal. He's always hungry, right? After it's all said and done, right, and he eats. What's the next verse? It's amazing. He sells the birthright, which is basically saying, Yaakov, you take. Next world, you know that spiritual stuff you're talking about? I have this world, immediate gratification, right? I want anything to tantalize my nerve endings, to satisfy my taste buds. And they ratify the sale, and he eats, right? He eats at the very end of chapter 25, verse 34. He eats, right, and he drinks. And what happens? The next verse, chapter 26, verse 1, and there's a hunger in the land. That's Esav. He's hungry again. He just ate. He just satisfied some immediate gratification. Right? He's jumping to another bar. He's jumping to another vacation, another Caribbean cruise. He's hungry again. Esav's always hungry. He's always hungry. He's never satisfied. He eats and he's always hungry. So he has neither world. He's the one who gave up that world for this world and he enjoys neither one. Yaakov is willing to relinquish this world for the peace and serenity of the next world and he ends up enjoying this world better. He enjoys this world better. That's the Chiddush. Okay, Esav, listen to this. Yitzchak's intention with Esav is a man battling with himself, a man with tremendous potential. He's like me, Yitzchak said. Gevura. Unfortunately, a distortion of Gevura, strictness, judgment, inner strength, is what Yitzchak is all about, but the distortion of that is just physical strength. That's Esav, a strong hunter. Gemara says, if a person has a tendency for bloodshed, what should he do? You know, certain people have a certain nature. You channel that. Become a moil. Do bris milas. Become a sheichet. Right? Okay, something that involves, you know, become a lawyer. No, sorry. that was a joke. We'll edit that later. We'll edit that. So anyway, yeah, doctors one thing, but the point is all these tendencies, all these character traits are not negative per se. You're supposed to use them. And David HaMelech, they said, looked like Esav. We talked about this before. He looked like Esav, and he's the man that took these tendencies and used them for Avodas Hashem. Okay? You take these drives. So that's what Yitzchak wanted. As, you know, we said he missed it by one generation. Yitzchak knew what Esav was about. Okay? And he knew Yaakov was the tzaddik, but he said, look, he's got physicality. Let's use that physicality as a means to an end. Right? Let him use his physicality like Zebulun one generation later to support Yaakov. Be involved in the physical world. Fix it up. Build roads, bathhouses, all these things, right? Earn money, everything. And make it so Yaakov can sit and learn Torah, and you'll have an equal share. That's how you can have your share in Torah. Right? Zebul and Yisachar. It happened in the next generation. That's what Yitzchak had in mind here. Rivka said, no, this is a guy, I know him. I got a brother named Lovin. I got a father named Basuel. I know wicked people when I see him. He ain't going to do that. He's going to use all those materialistic blessings for his own sake. And that's it. Yaakov comes dressed up as Esav, and what does he get? Materialistic blessings. Those were the blessings that were meant to go to Esav. Materialist. Look at him. All those blessings are strictly materialistic, right? This is chapter 27. Right? Chapter 27, if you look at the verses, verse 28, and God shall give you from the dew of the heavens and from the fat of the earth and wheat and all these things, right? Materialist blessings, because that's what he wanted Esau to have. Now, the spiritual blessings of Abraham, that only goes to Yaakov when Yitzchak knows he's speaking to Yaakov. Okay, so again, the perspective is the following. Yaakov realizes, Olam Hazeh, yeah, Olam Hazeh, this world, that's like the shell, the husk to the fruit, right? Like on a nut, you know, that shell, right, the fruit's inside. Well, this world, it's materialistic, all its endeavors here, that's like a shell for the fruit. It protects the fruit. You can use it, right? It's important, right? It's to be a means to an end, right? But if you seize the shell, the materialistic world, and let the fruit drop to the ground, then you've lost all sense of values. That was Esav. His only interest is in appearance. His name, Esav, means asui, ready-made. He's a ready-made man, right? So it says, it describes his birth, and his hair was like a coat, already made. He's already like born, fully developed, right? On the outside, he looked great, but there was no inner depth, right? Pretty much like all of these guys at Golden Gym, right? Okay.
Gold Gym.
You know, we had it in Chattanooga. It was amazing. He says, give me that red food. He says, right? He doesn't even call it by what it is. By the way, it was a mourner's meal of Avraham. Red, we had a grocery store in Chattanooga called Red Food Store. Couldn't believe it. It's like perfect, you know? Red Food Store. Unbelievable. Okay. Right. Okay. So that's Esau. He has no intention to delve any deeper into the matter. All he sees before him is red food. Right? He doesn't go into the inner essence, which we said was the mourner's meal. Avram Avinu, Avram, our father, died that day. The whole world was mourning him. Esav was out in the field committing five big sins. I mean big ones. You know, this is like the triple crown of sins, murder, rape, denying God, denying the resurrection of the dead, right? This was him. So, and then he comes in, and the final act, which is really the root of it all, he despises the birthright, the spirituality of the birthright. He's willing to sell it for a bowl of beans. So this philosophy of immediate gratification at the cost of the future symbolizes the whole non-Jewish, the Goyisha attitude of life. Doesn't have to be this righteous Goyim out there, but basically Edom, our society in general, that's the philosophy. I mean, that's what America builds up. By the way, advertising, anybody in advertising knows what's the color, the main major color they use? Red. It attracts the eye. Very from people, women in Mea Shearim, in Israel, for example, will not wear red clothes. It's not considered modest. It attracts your attention. The glory of a woman is not to have attention attracted towards her. Okay, so that's red. That's the advertising industry. Immediate gratification across the future, right? To live for Olam Hazeh. Okay? The concerns, the constant pampering, the concerns of the body, right? The physical over the mind, over the soul, at the expense of the soul. And therefore, it says, he called it red food, and therefore his name is Edom. Just because he called it red food, his name is Edom, it goes a lot deeper. That just symbolizes everything that he stood for. He's named Edom after this incident, forever ratifying his status and his nature. To exchange eternal values for the transitory, for the immediate gratification of the present. What you see is what you get. That's Esav. That's our exile that we're in. That's what we got to fight against. We're Yaakov. Yoshev Oyalim. We dwell inside. We look for the inner essence of things. What's behind it. Okay? So, we mentioned that Esav's the one that still is always hungry. Even with the selling out of the next world, he's not unhappy with this world. As a matter of fact, the Medrash brings down, after this was all said and done, a lot more was said than done. Now, after this is all said and done, he brought in a bunch of friends to mock Yaakov. Look, but he is willing to sell some sort of spiritual birthright, a chvesnish, what this means. Yeah, some esoteric stuff. And I got a good square meal out of it. And he made fun of Yaakov. So, as Rabbi Emanuel Feldman says in one of his books, Biblical, he says on this, like, that is the defense mechanism of the Goyisha world towards the committed Jew who's so at peace with man and God. So what their only weapon, you know, against this is to mock. They have this gnawing dissatisfaction of an empty existence, which is why they don't appreciate this world, the pleasure of this world, because they're always hungry. They're inside, they feel empty. So ridicule is their only weapon against reason. That's Esau. Bring in a bunch of friends and mock the whole thing. Make fun of it. You know, that's America. Everything's a joke in America. They make a joke about everything. Right? So that's it. Ridicule, mocking, making a joke about it. But once the whole merriment was over, once it was all said, Esau and his friends had this laugh. Again, as we said, the next verse, Vehi Rav Baretz, he's hungry again. Right, always at resentment of his brother, who's at peace with himself. Right, and that's why, again, he's called Edom. He doesn't have the patience, he doesn't have the interest, he doesn't have the inclination to delve into the heart of anything that's beyond the immediate surface. Red food. Right? Okay, now we'll stop, we'll take questions. It means the following, that he is supposed to be a master over his brother, Yaakov is supposed to be a master over Esav, but when we don't keep where we're supposed to be spiritually, adhering to the Torah. Remember? The famous line here, Kol Kol Yaakov, the voice of Yaakov, Fayadayim De Esav. When the Kol is the Kol of Yaakov, when we're doing what we're supposed to do, right? Spirituality, the voice. Right? Again, interest in the voice, the inner dimension. The voice is the inner dimension. Right? Yadayim, the hands of Esav, the outside again. the hazardous outside. The kol is the inside. When we're doing in tefillah and prayer and Torah what we're supposed to do, then his hands will have no power over us. But if we're not, then he takes off that ol, that yoke, and he has a he can rule over us at that time. And that's what that means. He can take the yoke off. Just want you to know, all the notes, right, on Aesop, what color paper clips would you think I would use? Isn't that great? Yes. I mean, it seems, I can't say this, I mean, it's dangerous to say this, that Rivka misunderstood that Yitzchak always knew what was going on, and Yaakov was always get the spiritual blessings. He just wanted, that was the difference of opinion here, if you will. Each one was doing what they were supposed to do. Make that perfectly clear. They were both right. Yitzchak wanted a Zebulun. Yitzchak wanted Esau to have materialistic blessings. That's all. And Rivka said, no way. He's going to use it for himself. He's not going to use it to help Yaakov. If Yaakov doesn't get these materialistic blessings, he will never have anything in this world. Right? So that was the difference of opinion. But we're going to see this story. The story continues. It ain't over yet because, right, well, what happens is you're going to see what's going to happen after this is that you see that Yitzchak wasn't that wrong because, number one, the Gemara brings down that because Yitzchak loved Esav, Esav could never have a sort of a spiritual plea at the end of days. Hey, you know, it's not my fault. You shouldn't redeem Israel. I should have a share in Torah because my father never loved me. My parents gave up on me. So Yitzchak loved Esav. So he never has that complaint in the end of days. Never gave up on him. Yaakov is going to be punished for keeping Dina, his daughter Dina, away from him because maybe she could have returned him for good. Maybe she could have made him a Baal Tshuva. It's amazing. So you see, you can't give up even on an Esav. So Yitzchak knew what he was doing. On the other hand, Rivka knew what she was doing. Rivka had a prophecy that she was not allowed to tell Yaakov at the beginning of the Parsha. So she was doing her part. The bottom line is, both Yitzchak and Rivka were doing their parts because Hashem wanted this orchestrated in such a way that Yaakov gets the blessings in this way. That, for whatever reason, Kabbalistically, the Zohar talks about tremendous rectification this did. But I'll tell you one thing. This is Yaakov's Akedas Yitzchak. This is called, the Medrash says, he was Moiser Nefesh. He was giving up his life doing this. Why? Because we said a test goes against your nature, right? All of Avram's tests were against Chesed. What is Yaakov's nature? What is his character trait? What is he known for? Emes, truth. Yaakov, the man of Emes, the man whose image is engraved on the throne of glory of God. Whatever that means. It says he looked like Adam. In next week's Parsha, the angels go up high and see what the perfect man's supposed to be, and they go down and see Yaakov, and they're the same. Right? Yaakov, who's called, in I think next week's Parsha, by Hashem, Kel. The name usually refers to God. Whatever that means. Right? He is the chosen of the patriarchs. He is Yisroel. His name is changed yet. That's us. Our land is called Yisroel. We're called children of Israel, B'nai Yisrael, not B'nai Yitzchak, B'nai Abraham, right? He's the man of Emes, truth. The seal of Hashem is truth, right? He's a direct representation of that on earth. So all his tests are involving truth. His whole life, he has to deal with the greatest con artists and liars of his time. Esav, lover, right? Complete liar. Right, what happens when he gets married? His wives are trick him. They're switched on him, right? And he's deceived by his sons. Yosef is dead, right? Always deception, trickery. His mother asked him to deceive his father and dress up like the epitome of Sheker, of a liar. Esau, to get the birthrights of Emes, of truth. You hear this? All these things give you a little inkling. We don't know what Emes is. Emes, truth, is doing the will of God. Right? It's not what we think. And sometimes you have to resort to these things. I want you to know, it says Yitzchak vayicharad charada gedoyla. It says that Yitzchak trembled exceedingly when he realized that he gave the blessings to Yaakov, because he realized at that point that throughout the exile, sometimes Jews are going to have to resort to some sort of trickery to survive in exile against the Goyish nations, and to know when to do that and when not to do that, that's a harada gedola. That's a tremendous trembling, because that's a real, you know, lying is a big sin. You can't say a sheker. You can't deceive. There are exceptional circumstances for survival. It's a very big issue. We can't go into that. Stop again. We'll take questions. You know, the spirit or the sword? Yitzchak's ideas make the sword a slave to the spirit. Okay? And that was a private prophecy. She was not to give it over. Okay? There was this description of Yaakov being a dweller of tents, and Esav a ish sadeh, a man of the field, open field. Again, what is an open field? It's unboundaried. It's unrestricted. That's what he wants to be. Undisciplined. Don't tie me down. In fact, the non-from world in Israel calls themselves chofshi. Free. We're free. We're not bound to anything. Actually, they're the biggest slaves because they're bound and tied down to their desires. Let's see one of those guys get off TV for an entire Shabbos. Right? Right? So they cannot be confined within the halachas of Torah. And Yaakov is just the opposite. He's willing to nullify himself, to constrict himself, to sit in the Yoshev Ohalim. That's what he's called. He dwells in the tent. So they say there, Rashi brings down, he dwells, yeshiva, from the word Yoshev, to dwell. So we'll have to discuss what that means. In other words, to be in yeshiva is more than just physically being there. Your whole mental frame is Yoshev, that you dwell there, that this is your main place of residence. That's what Chaim Shapiro just blew me a kiss. If that is enough to, you know, get you right, okay. So he's a Yoshev Oalim. That's his main residence. That's where he realizes it doesn't matter if he only learns 1 hour a day. But this is the core of my life. And that's why yeshiva is called yeshiva, the main place to be. Okay. Question. Ideal situation, and that's what will be in the end of days. The Goyish world. This represents the Goyish world and the Jewish world to work together. Okay? It didn't work. Esav was thoroughly wicked. He did not want to change. Okay? It works in the next generation. Zebul and Yisachar.
Would he change if he wanted to?
Well, no. You see that he had opportunities. That's the whole idea why Yitzchak loved him and worked with him and wanted to give him the brachas. If I give him the brachas, he needs the brachas. Yaakov doesn't need the brachas. He needs the brachas. Worked with him. He tried everything possible. It just didn't work. It's just that he was just thoroughly wicked. The answer to that is a very good question. So you're not allowed to marry your daughter to a Russia, a wicked person. You're not allowed to marry her. So why was Yaakov punished for hiding Dina in a box? When they reunite, they meet, they want her to look at her, you know. So the answer is basically, you're right, 100%. But they said he slammed the lid down too hard. Meaning that he should have felt a little bit of a kvetch, a little bit of regret that it's a shame I got to hide her, because maybe he could have become a Baal Tshuva through her. So you got to remember, again, these great people are going to be slammed for any little thing to. Guys, I'm going to hold the questions. I'll take them again in a couple minutes. We mentioned that Yitzchak's life is almost a carbon copy of Avram. He even looked like Avram. It brings down a Rashi. When he was born, he even looked like Avram physically. So no one would say anything happened when Sarah was abducted. Okay? They both want to go down to Egypt for the famine. They both introduce their wives and sisters. They both deal with the digging of the wells. Right? They both send, right? Go to Lavan for, Avram sends Eliezer to get a wife, right? For Rivka, and Yaakov himself gets two wives there, right? Each have one tzaddik as a son and one wicked person as a son, right? They both make a treaty with Avimelech. They both have this mystical blessing, Mikol. And to go on with this, they're both promised from Hashem, as Hashem does with all the patriarchs, that I'll be with you. V'yeimach. That's repeated three times. And they both have this promise that K'moisias HaShvua, I'll fulfill the oath that I made, that you'll get the land of Israel, which is promised, I have here documented at least seven times. Okay? And over again, you're going to see that all the nations of the earth will be blessed through you. That's repeated three times in this parsha. So certain things are go continuously with all the patriarchs. Now, I'm sorry to say something else before this. I'll stop for a question. By the way, that's the final blow, literally was his final blow. He got his head knocked off. But for Yaakov having to deal with Yaakov being the epitome of Emes, a truth, and always having to deal with the falsehood of the world, he even had to be buried with the head of Esav, the epitome of falsehood. It says Esav had the head of a gun. He had a head of a genius. But his body didn't follow suit. His body, the body, the desires, the physicality, right? He couldn't overwhelm that. He was so obsessed with his body and physical gratification that he used to go by the yeshiva of Shem and Ever, hear a few words, and come back to Yitzchak. He said, "What'd you learn today?" And he used to give him a whole shiur on what he learned today. He had the head of a gun. He was a genius. He was a genius. But again, it shows you something. You can have tremendous intellect, and you can know how to learn. But if you're caught in the taivas of Olam Hazeh, if you're caught in the desires and lusts and honors and jealousies of this world, right, then you'll go nowhere. And that's the story of Esau. He had the potential to be great, but he could not control his desires. Okay, this parsha, by the way, I want to move off of Esau and discuss a very important parsha of anti-Semitism. But before we do that, I wanted to read you this one point that I read from Rav Mordechai Miller of Shabbos Shiurim. He says, first of all, a person, again, who wants to sell his heritage for, you know, a bowl of beans, we have to immediately question his right to it in the first place. So, one thing I want to talk about is why now at the mourning period, this is from my friend also, why now at the mourning period of Avraham does Yaakov decide to buy the birthright? Of all times! You know, you're mourning the passing of your father. Do it another time. Now you offer to buy the birthright. It says what happens is the following. At a time of death, one contemplates what life is all about. That's what says Shlomo HaMelech writes. It's better to go to a house of a mourner than to the house of a simcha, because, you know, you'll see where you're headed and you'll straighten up your act. Okay, so that's a time in death you contemplate what life all about. So for a tzaddik, what happened? A tzaddik like Yaakov, he's inspired. Life is indeed too short. You know what? I need the Bechorah. I need to be the Bechor so I can do life in this world, in spirituality. I can do things, right? So now, at time of death, Yaakov really, it's impressed on him. This is a short life. I need to do all I can spiritually. You know, how much can you do here in this short span of time? I need that Bechorah, right? But for a Russia, for a wicked person, it's fakert. For a wicked person like Esav, he also says life is too short. And I got to grab all the gusto I can. And he, you know, grabs a six-pack of Schlitz, right? I don't need responsibility. Life is too short to hamper me. I don't want responsibility, right? I want to hop a rein, whatever's before me, right? Grab while the grabbing's good, right? Eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. That's the motto of Edom, Rome. That's Esav, right? So, Yaakov also wants the chaperein in ruchnius, in spirituality. Now is the time to take responsibility, right? Get the bechorah, get the firstborn rights of all the spiritual responsibility that entails. Life is too short for both of them. One for spirituality, the other for physical gratification. That's why it happens now. So, Shabbos Shurim, Rav Mordechai Miller. The Torah justifies Yaakov buying the birthright because it says after the birthright, when you should have had some regret, what did I do? Esav says, and he despised the birthright. He didn't even have any regret after he did it, after he ate, after he had the physical gratification and ate. Okay, so. Okay, well, actually, he mentions what we already mentioned, that when Yaakov saw that he, you know, looked at this food and was not interested in being the bearer of a new message to mankind, which is what the patriarchs were all about, and to spread the knowledge of God, he said the following from the Medrash: is this wicked one who stands before me going to be before Hashem in sacrifice? So Yaakov risked his life for the Bechorah to get the firstborn rights. What does it mean he risked his life, right? So he risked his life in that he had to go against, for him, that was risking his life, to go against his inner nature, his inner essence of Emes, right? And then all things that ensued, being dressed up like Esav, for him, that was risking his life, okay? Shema b'koli, listen to my voice. Haruach HaKodesh Shema, the prophecy energy. And he understood that. It still says two angels had to help him. His knees were shaken. And he even uses a word, very interesting. Every word in Hebrew is so significant. You'll appreciate this. It says, I think it says, perhaps my father will feel me, you know, and see that I'm not Yaakov, I'm a, you know, Ish Chalak, and Esav's a hairy man. So it doesn't say the word Ulai, right? I'm sorry, it does say the word Ulai instead of Pen. Pen would be the more appropriate word, right? Which means, they both mean perhaps, but Ulai is the connotation Alavai. For, I hope he does.
Yeah.
So the whole thing will be called off. I hope he finds out that I don't want to go through with this. Right.
So.
Right. And Ulai is Alavai. My father should feel me. Right. So you should have used the word pen. Perhaps my father will feel me. Pen. Oh, I don't want him to. Right. But he uses the opposite. So he was very reluctant to this. This was a very big test for him, and it counters Esau's, you know, Esau had a gavaltic kibud av. He honored his father, right? So that spiritual merit in the spiritual world, Yaakov had to counter it. How did he do it? By having the same mesiris nefesh, the same self-sacrificing for giving honor to his mother, listening to her to do something that went against his nature. So he offset Esau's mitzvah kibud av. Okay, by the way, it's interesting, when this is all said and done, Esav says, you know what, I'm really mad at Yaakov, I'm going to kill him, but I don't want to cause my father any sorrow, so I'll kill him first. He plotted to kill his father. This is amazing, you know, this is the guy who's praised for his kibud av, for honoring his father. So there's such a thing as a shoyched le-yetzer tayv, a bribe to the good yetzer. You know, we always hear like Sheikh of the Sultan, a bribe to Satan. Like later on, Yaakov will send gifts to Esav. You know, bribe him. And, you know, like, right? So, like there's a mad dog. And don't try to confront a mad dog. Throw him a piece of meat. While he's chomping on it, walk around him. So this is the opposite. Esav pacified his good nature, his Yetzer Tov, by doing, again, this is what he's all about, a superficial, external form of honoring his father. He used to dress his big day chamudas, his very nice clothes. But inside he was planning to kill him. He gave a bribe to his Yetzer Tov and displayed all these good things on the external, right? Okay, my Yetzer Tovs keep bugging me. I should be nice. I should honor my father. So I'll do all these nice gestures and feed him and dress nice before him. And inside he plotted to kill him. It's a very fascinating interesting insight. Yes, okay, we're going to get to it. One more thing on Esav again. This idea of Esav being... by the way, one of the reasons Yitzchak didn't want Yaakov to have the materialistic blessings is because he didn't want him to be encumbered by the physical world, which can distract you from spirituality. Okay? So this is very comparable to the... And you're going to see at the end of days, there's a Gemara that the Goyim will say, we had a portion in Torah. Why? We built marketplaces. We build streets. Hashem would say, no, you did it for your own intentions. But had they did it for those intentions, you know, for the sake of Israel learning Torah, they would have had a share in Torah. And that's the bracha Noach gives his children, Yafes. Yafes, right, he says, Yafes, you're to dwell in the tents of Shem, right? Take all that physicality, your materialistic pursuits, and, you know, let it be a vessel for spirituality, right? And therefore, not only will you have a share in Torah, but you will make the physical spiritual, right? You'll make the physical spiritual even. And that's, you know, that's what we do all the time with physical objects. Okay, the question's asked, by the way, you should know, everything Yitzchak did, the Shekhinah was resting on him. So those brachas went out prophetically. Hashem put the words in his mouth. And that's why he says at the end, Gam Baruch Yeh, he will remain blessed. Because I realize Hashem put those words in my mouth must mean that he's meant to get those brachas. It must mean my calculation was wrong about them having a partnership. It's hard to say they're wrong. Yitzchak still had to do that effort. I know I'm going very fast, guys. I'm going to stay afterwards and answer questions. Let's talk about Yitzchak's part of the outside world, what that was all about. We have an incident here with the wells. The Plishtim stop him up. He undigs them. And the basic thing here you have is one Jew in a depression, a famine throughout their lives, gets tremendously wealthy. And it says right there that they were jealous of him, and they chased him out. Okay, and then afterwards they got scared. He's so powerful, let's make a treaty with them. And then they have the chutzpah to say, you know, we just like we didn't do you nothing but good, you know, I didn't kill you. That's what the commentaries say. Abimelech said, look, I didn't kill you. You got out of her good. So do good with us and make us a treaty. So they say the mushel is this lion had a bone caught in its throat. It says, whoever can come and get it out, I'll give it a reward. All right, so a stork came with its long beak, went in there and plucked it out, and now demanded his reward. And the lion says, what? You want a reward? Isn't it enough to say that you put your head in a lion's mouth and you came out alive? So that's what Abimelech said. Look, you're a Jew. This is exile for you. You came in and out of my country alive. That's enough for you. And that's the message, and it's true. We have to remember that. We don't go around marching and demanding things. We are in exile. You got to be a proud Jew, but we're in exile, and we're just happy to be able to practice our religion. Only when things conflict with not our physicality, but our spiritual, then we rebel. And that's the story of Hanukkah. The story of Hanukkah is when they tried to do away with our spirituality and disgrace our base in Midrash, then we fought. Then we physically fight. Okay, but other times when they put taxes on us or any other, we don't do it. So, okay, question made. You find that Yitzchak uses a lot of his senses. Give me food, gets wine, let me feel you, my son. He smells them, smells like a field of apples. He kisses them. All this is to bribe the senses. The physical gets away in the spiritual. For example, Shabbos, we eat nicely, all these things, we dress nicely, to bribe the physical body not to schlep us down. So it too will have its thing and be happy so the soul can be happy and we can get the spiritual content of the day. That's what Yitzchak's doing, eating, drinking, smelling, all the senses. He's blind. So he's using all the other senses, right, to bribe them. You know, and by the way, a kiss, the Zohar says he kissed him. Kabbalistically, a kiss, and this relates also to Yaakov and Rachel, because those two, that's Israel, okay? A kiss, Kabbalistically, that's a deep spiritual intimate thing that is a cleaving of soul to soul, and that's what Yitzchak did before he gave the blessings, which is highly significant. Okay. Interesting, a word is used here. When Yaakov mentions to, you know, Yitzchak says to him, how did you get her so quickly? You fixed the food, right? So he says, he crushed Shem Elokecha lefanai. Interesting, because Hashem happened it before me. It's hard to translate, but that's the word from Mikra, coincidence. In a deeper sense, he was saying the following thing. Any coincidence is no coincidence. All coincidences are from God, right? Everything is from Hashem. What looks like coincidence, ki hikra Hashem Elokecha lefanai. It's from God. What it looks like is sometimes to us as coincidence, which is a non-Jewish thought, coincidence. Okay. It's very interesting that the clothes of Esau fit Yaakov, who is a much smaller person. They fit Yaakov. Okay? So I don't know if you remember the story of David and Goliath and Shaul. King Saul, David puts on, Saul, it says, was a head taller than anybody. Right? Puts on his clothes and they fit. And David immediately sensed that that Saul knew what that meant. And he said, I'm not used to these things, and he took them off. What really was saying there, that he was fit for Malchus, to be a king. If all of a sudden those clothes fit him, the armor fit him, he was going to be next to him, and Saul understood it. And David didn't want to get him jealous. Same thing here. Rivka knew the brachas are, now she was really for sure, she had a sign that the brachas are meant to go to Yaakov. I'm putting the firstborn, Esav's, clothes on him, and suddenly they fit him. He is meant to get the Bechorah. So beautiful insight. Okay. By the way, this word, chapter 27, verse 7, V'avarchechecha lefnei Hashem, I will bless you before God, right? Which means the righteous don't even know the words that they're going to say. They're inspired by God to say certain words, and Rivka's assured that there's no deception here, that Hashem knows, and that's where the brachas are coming from, who is standing before Yitzchak, and Hashem is giving the blessings. That's what it means, V'avarchecha lefnei Hashem, you'll be blessed before God. Right, obviously Hashem would have let these words come out if it wasn't meant to be. There's a lot about this physicality, the eating and stuff I didn't get into, but basically the table of the righteous is like a mizbeach, and their drinks is like the wine libation in the mikdash, right? And Esav's food is like a korban that Yitzchak was eating. So there's a whole thing going on here. Okay. We have another example we have with Avraham. We have a Yitzhak. We're going to have all three of us tithing, that they all tithe. And there's many, we're supposed to tithe our money, but in another sense, a person's also supposed, there's a rule, by the way, it's the only promise. You're not allowed to test God. But in Malachi chapter 3, verse 10, it says, you can test me on this. You give tithing, I'll make you rich. It's unbelievable. Hashem says, you can test me on this. Asher lis'aser, you can tithe in order to be rich. It's a play on word. Meiser, I also, tithe, la asher, to become rich. You can tithe to become rich. But Moshe Feinstein says this goes in spirituality. A person has to tithe his time and give at least a tenth of it to help others less fortunate. That's what you're going to say? That's beautiful insight. Isn't that beautiful? So you have to take some of your time, a tithe of it, and help people that are less fortunate than you. Okay. Very interesting. Again, what you mentioned, idea of the Plishtim being jealous of the Jew who prospers in exile, okay? I'm going to have to go into it another time. We're running out of time here. But this is Abasi Abba Simon Labonim. This becomes a paradigm in the future that the anti-Semitism, the resentment, that resentment to the rich Jew, that rich Jew being successful while the rest of us are suffering, and this kind of sets it in motion. As a matter of fact, he used to say, better have the manure of Yitzchak's donkeys than the gold of Avimelech. Stop for questions. I think that we see that Avram gives full price, more than, like a tremendous price for Machpelah. So there'll be no argument for it in the future. And it says, too, this isn't finished. There's going to be more and more gifts that Yaakov's going to give Esav. Over and over again, he's going to make sure there's no contesting this. And they say, like you said, that really the meal, that was a form of ratifying a covenant of Reis, but there was actual sale, of money. Okay, but these, basically, Yaakov and Esav, to sum it up, is two philosophies of good and evil, of darkness and light, right? This world, the next world, right? Physical versus the spiritual. That's what's going on here. It's going to play out throughout all the history of mankind. And neither one is going to reign at the same time. Either Yaakov stands for morality and justice will reign, or you'll have given license to your desires and being barbaric. That will reign. And that's what the prophecy of Rivka is. Okay. Avram hoylid et Yitzchak. The first words of the Parsha. Avram gives birth to a Yitzchak. Esoterically, mystically, Kabbalistically, in the spheres, Avram represents Chesed, right? And Yitzchak is Gevurah, strictness. Avram, the Chesed, you can't have blind Chesed, loving kindness, or you start bestowing kindness on people that don't deserve it and can destroy the world. So it has to be tempered with Gevurah. That's how the world is set up. Remember, first Hashem wanted the world to be set up a strict deen, strictness, judgment. He said it couldn't take it. It has to temper it with Chesed. Okay? Right? And that's Yir and Ava, serving God out of fear and out of love. That's what we call Hashem Avinu Malkeinu. Hashem, we serve you as Avinu, our father, Chesed, like a son, to a father, Malkeinu, out of fear, right? This is the weekday. This is Shabbos. The weekday, like a servant. On Shabbos, like a son. Over and over again, you have this theme. Avram hoilid its Yitzchak, from the chesed, gave birth to a gevura, right? Untempered gevura, that's hatred. Untempered chesed, well, that's liberal, okay? You got to have them together, right? Right? You got them together. Okay. It says that Rivka was very upset. And, you know, she didn't know what this was. I'm sorry, before that, it says that Yitzchak's prayer was answered. That's what Rashi says. Rivka prayed, and Yaakov and Yitzchak prayed, but his prayer was answered. And the difference in the prayers were the following, according to the Kotzker Rebbe. Yitzchak prayed, there's going to be two sons here, right? And they ran and they seem to be diametrically opposed. So Yitzchak prayed, if they're going to be opposed, let one son be thoroughly a tzaddik, even if it meant the other one's going to be Kula Russia, a complete evil person. And Rivka said, no, for the sake that one won't be completely wicked, so one won't be completely righteous. There's a lot to expound on that, but the prayer of Yitzchak was answered. Better to have a fully Kula righteous person, right? Even if it means having a completely wicked person. Okay, bear with me. We're almost there, guys. Esav is compared to an earthenware vessel that's bejeweled with diamonds, right? But inside it's earthenware. It's nothing, right? He cared only for the superficial. He viewed himself as being completely self-made, we said, right? He perfected his external appearance. That's why it says he looked, you know, he had hair, right? He said he was a scary-looking baby. The Medrash says he had teeth already. It was like a scary-looking kid, right? So that's him. He's not concerned about inner development, right? I'm a self-made man. Pull myself up by my bootstraps, right? Was not interested in developing. He had no desire for change. He felt he didn't lack anything. Therefore, his name is Esav, in word Asui, made. I'm made and done. You hear? Didn't want to change. That's the worst thing in the world. You can have all the bad, if you want to, you have all the bad characteristics. If you want to change, there's hope for you. He didn't want to change. Okay. As opposed to Yaakov, right? Yoshev Oyalim, a life focused in Torah. Again, not merely learning Torah. Yoshev Oyalim, yeshiva, to sit, right? More than in just an educational institution, a yeshiva means that's your home. That's where you're Yoshev. That's where you dwell. Remember we talked about the difference between Yoshev and a ger. A ger is a sojourner. A Yoshev is a permanent dweller. Right? Your life is completely, that's what yeshiva means. Yoshev Oyalim means your life's completely enveloped and guided by Torah. You may only get to learn half an hour a day, but you realize that's your source. That's what your whole life is about. Okay. Interesting. We make fun. At least we should. That ought to be a level for us if we make fun of Esau for selling his spiritual birthright for a bowl of beans. We should be making fun of that. Okay.
Pity.
It's right. A pity. Okay. But at any rate, so we make fun of that. Listen to this. This is a beautiful observation from Rav Levin. He says, it's truth. We all do it. We do the same thing all the time. He said, if you think about it, how many of us measure success not by the yardstick of how we're doing spiritually, but our position, our prosperity, right? At the same time, we belittle any success in Torah learning or that we're getting closer to Hashem, right? How often do we exchange our birthright for a bowl of beans? Right? How often are we not willing to sacrifice getting up a few minutes early to make sure we dive in on time, whatever it is, right? For the extra sleep, or we have an extra dollar we can make. What if it means that I have to sacrifice some spirituality? We do it. We exchange our birthright for a glorified bowl of beans. Right? Right. So that's the source of this is from a book called Pnimim. In English. And very nice stuff. It's like a Torah for Dixie type of thing. Okay. Two more minutes, and then I'll take all the questions, because I'm almost down. I got one more red clip, which must mean that's Esav. Just a second. It says that Rivka wanted Yaakov Dafka to have the clothes of Esav when he got the bracha. Why? Because she foresaw in her prophecy that when we're in Golis, and we'll be wearing the clothes of Esav. We'll look like Esav. We'll be doing all the things in the secular world like Esav, right? That the blessings that Yitzchak will give will still land on us. In other words, had Yaakov come in looking like Yaakov, you could say, we're only worthy for the blessings where we're on the level of Yaakov, and we look like Yaakov. But even when we look like Esav, there's the Yaakov inside. Even on the outside, we look like Esav, but a kol Yaakov. The inner essence of us is Yaakov, and we do things for that reason. Okay? You guys are very patient. Here it is. Here it is, guys. If Esav would have completely nullified before Yaakov, it would have been a rectification, says the Kedushi Arim, of all the vanity of the world. The same, there's a play on words here, Shab, okay. He had no way of rectifying himself, Esav. His only way of rectifying himself, it was making himself subservient to Yaakov. So it gives a lot of insight on certain brachas that you should be a slave to your brothers. That's not a punishment as much as a rectification. Right, and in the end of days, that's what will happen, and they'll realize that. Okay, I still got four more clips. Questions? I'll repeat it after class. Okay.
What happens to Thanksgiving in this class?
What?
What happens to this class in 2 weeks on Thanksgiving?
There's a special class I give every year about Thanksgiving. You'll enjoy it. It's a special Thanksgiving class. Same time, same place. Okay. Interesting. Again, this famous statement, which is played out throughout history, Akol Kol Yaakov, Vayadai Midei Esav, the voice is the voice of Yaakov, the hands are the hands of Esav. So even though the outside actions, the hands, look more impressive than just, you know, just mere words, the voice of Yaakov, right? Let's see action, right? Don't give me words. Let's see action. That's what they say in the secular world. But in truth, the hands can only extend so far. Right? But the voice extends and extends and breaks down walls in heaven, and that can cause all sorts of ramifications in the whole world, while the hands are limited to an immediate area. Okay, guys, I think that's about it. I'll just finish with a quick story if you want. It's a humorous thing, and I like to make you guys laugh. Okay, let's make you laugh. It's interesting, one more comment. Ramban says, you see all the patriarchs were like kings, even though we're a small nation, 3-4 Jews. Kings, Avimelech here again, comes and makes a treaty with us. Interesting, we never feel we need to make a treaty with them, when in reality we should. They make a treaty with us, they break the treaty, they broke the treaty that they made with Avram, and afraid of retaliation, make another peace treaty with us. And we never ask for a peace treaty of them, and we really need it. Because they, you know, are the ones that are aggressive. That's an interesting, again, Masse Avos. Here's the story. It says in Gemara Nida that a child sees, right, from one end of the world to the other end, when he's in his mother's womb, he has the best of all worlds. He sees everything, right? And he has an angel teaching him Torah. He has an angel teaching him Torah. It's a great place. Right? It's the best of all times, they say. So, we have Pirkei Avos, Ethics of Our Fathers, that says, Aselecha Rav, Kanalecha Chaver. Make for yourself a Rebbe, buy for yourself a friend. What it means, buy, it means even if it's a monetary loss sometimes to maintain the friendship. So it seems it's make yourself a rabbi, but buy yourself a friend. It seems it's more important to have a friend than it is a rabbi. A stronger language with the friend. Kanala, even if it costs you money, get a friend. Because a friend, we all know, we're very concerned with our children, they shouldn't have bad friends because they could have more of an influence on them. Right? We're influenced by our environment. If you have a bad friend, you got to get out of there, right? So, now, the famous Medrash says that Yaakov and Esav were in Rivka's womb. When they went by a house of idol worshiping, Esav wanted out. Right? Went by a place of Avodas Hashem, a yeshiva, Yaakov wanted out. Bisham, I understand when they went by an idol worshiping that Esav wanted out. There's no idol worshiping. You know, he has a learning Torah there. He wanted out. Good. But Yaakov has an angel teaching him Torah. Why is it when they went by a yeshiva he wanted out? It just goes to show you. Even if your Rebbe is an angel, if you got a roommate like Esav, you got to get out of there. Hashem wants us to enjoy the physical world. He created a beautiful world and wants you to enjoy it. But not to get lost in it. Right? You know, you have a good food on Shabbos, but don't lose Shabbos in the cholent. Right? But Esav was a man that was so physical that the last ditch effort was, okay, fine, you don't have a balance. At least use the physical to enable your brother to delve in spiritual. Maybe that's the way you can get a portion in the spiritual. But you're right. We're talking about two extreme people. One, Kulo Rasha, completely evil. One, Kulo Tzadik, right? And most of us, you know, obviously fit in between these two realms. Okay, so the idea is, yes, you can go and play tennis, enjoy the world, you know, in a kosher way. It helps. You can see God's wonders in the world. You can take a walk and come. Okay, right? But, right, Esav was an extreme example. This was the only shot for him. It's a dangerous statement, right? Because that's a self-made religion. It can be good, it could be a stepping stone, but that is the basis of liberalism, where most of these people, I'm not saying all of them, a lot of these people are so concerned about environmental rights and animal, I understand that, but I'm saying that's where it can go. A feel-good religion. In other words, it's very easy to be a good person as long as no one's telling you what to do. There's a mechanism inside a person called a Yetzer Hara. If your parents tell you, take out the garbage, you immediately, or your siblings, you immediately reject it. Had they not said anything, you'd probably done it on your own.
Right. Okay.
But that's the same thing when we grow up. We don't like people telling us what to do. So the whole idea of Yiddishkeit is God says and we do it. It's very easy. There's a halacha. Greater is to do a mitzvah that you're commanded than to voluntarily do a mitzvah. Why? Voluntarily mitzvah, no one's telling you to do it, so the Yetzer Hara doesn't... Right. You know, cook up with you.
For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.